This podcast was recorded Thursday, March 28th at 10:30 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like Fox News will run a banner headline that reads, "Hard-working migrants die in tragic bridge collapse." You know, Fox is all over migrants when they are charged with a crime. Fair and balanced, after all. Let's talk politics. This is Snollig Oster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollig Osters, those shrewd politicians who are all for term limits until they approach the end of their terms. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, an RNC litmus test for applicants stretches the truth. But first, as we saw last week, Ohio remains firmly Trump country. His endorsement of Bernie Moreno led to the Cleveland businessman's landslide victory over more establishment-type Republicans in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. The numbers are clear for President Trump, aside from what he did for Bernie Moreno. In 2016, Trump beat Hillary Clinton by about a half million votes and 8 percentage points. In 2020, Trump beat Joe Biden, again, by an 8-point margin and by about a half million votes. In 2024, polls so far here in Ohio have Trump leading Joe Biden by at least 10 percentage points. Trump dominates in the rural areas, Democrats dominate in the urban areas, and people who live in both are baffled by how the other folks think. How can you vote for Trump? How can you vote for Joe Biden? They ask, often in a more colorful tone. So today on Snollig Oster, let's try to get beyond the name-calling and get to the roots of Trump's appeal in Ohio. Joining us is a lifelong conservative who lives in rural western Ohio, a region he represented as a member of the Ohio House. Gene Krebs, welcome to Snollig Oster.
Thank you very much for having me, and I always enjoy your show.
Great to have you. I mean, I call you the reasonable Republican out there in western Ohio, and you are very thoughtful, and I'm interested in your take on this. So here we are, 2024. 9 years after Donald Trump appeared on the scene. It's been 9 years, Gene. Did you think he would still be around?
Yes, it's because he's speaking to certain core issues that many people find resonates with their own lives. So the way I frame this, and I can tell you exactly where I was when this framing occurred to me. I was sitting down at a table with a Miami professor. We live very close to Miami, and she was from one of the early USSR, satellite countries. And she says, "Why does my party?" She looked at me. She says, "Why does your party hate immigrants so much?" And it suddenly occurred to me in a flash, everything fell into place. The question is whether or not you think the American pie is static, or whether or not you think the American pie is growing. If you think the American pie is static and it's not growing, what that means is that every new person who comes into the country takes a little bit of that slice of the American pie, leaving less for you. If you think the American pie is growing, then every new immigrant can add their own talents and voices to this American melting pot. And from that, the pie can keep growing larger. In talking to my neighbors and relatives here in rural Ohio, which for me, that's a redundant statement. That's the same thing. What I get from them a lot is this sense of constrained outlook. There's a social construct that sees life as being limited. Part of that is because when they watch TV, they see how people are living glamorous lives elsewhere around the country, especially in those 20 counties that control 80% of the GDP in America, the large urban counties. They see that. They see the fact that their city cousins are able to enjoy really fast internet. And as you've often heard me joke on your show, Mike, I used to represent Cell Free Ohio. I still do. And whenever I'm out driving and I'm coming back through Preble County, I tell my folks I'm talking to, I will lose you in a quarter of a mile. I can tell you exactly where I lose you, and then there's no cell phone service.
Yeah.
So these folks feel just they feel vast like areas.
They feel like they have been left behind, and this has happened in American history before. We have had anti-immigrant movements before, and is this any different than, say, what we saw, you know, in the 1920s and 30s, and probably even before then at some point? You know, no Irish need apply, and there have been phases of our history where we have had this movement.
This is a little bit different, and I'll give you another aspect of this, in urban black males who did not finish high school are now becoming a growing group for Trump. And it's much the same thing. They see other people of their community and their cohort on TV, social media, whatever, moving up the social food chain, the economic food chain. And they're wondering, well, wait a minute, there's nothing wrong with me. Why can't that happen? How did I get left out? And so when you sit down and talk to these people, there's all across the Trump universe, there's a strong sense of that the system has discriminated against them, that has conspired against them. And so when Trump comes in and says, I'm fighting for you, they all extrapolate their own personal grievances. And sometimes they're very well founded, where the system has not been agreeable to having them move up the food chain. We keep talking about the fact we live in a meritocracy, yet there's a whole lot of folks in rural Ohio and much of the urban cities that have been left out because the ruling elite simply have not wanted to make room for them by a variety of mechanisms.
Yeah, there's a definite income divide and things like that. Now, so he's a populist, and he's tapping into this disenchantment, this anger, this dissatisfaction with the way things are going. But populists are not new in this country. We've had populists for as long as we've had popular politics. What makes him different? He crosses the line all the time. But we've had folks in the past who have been populist, and if they cross the line, they're disqualified. Why is he not disqualified by crossing that line?
Like Tocqueville wrote, this is a country where celebrities rule. And he's not crossed the line because these are the exact same lines that this population has encountered in their day to day. They have been discriminated against. They have been left behind. And so when he says, I will make America great again, what they're hearing is, I will make you great again, as it was back in the 50s and 60s. Now, so he says, I'm going to stop all this trade with foreign countries. I'm going to put 100% tariffs on cars from Mexico. And they go, oh my God, yes, we have to stop all these imports. The imports is what's killing our jobs. Well, then I tell them that Mike Hicks from Ball State, an economist up there who's like the Indiana version of Ohio State's Ned Hill, says, yeah, but 88% of job losses since 1980 in America has been due to automation, not to outsourcing overseas. And they look at me and they go, I really don't care.
Yeah, that brings us to Donald Trump in 2017. 2017, he had just been elected president, and he spoke to his supporters at a rally in Youngstown, in Mahoning County, which had been basically flipped from Democrat to Republican in the 2016 election. And here's what Donald Trump said at that rally.
And I'll tell you what, I rode through your beautiful roads coming up from the airport, and I was looking at some of those big, once incredible job-producing factories, and my wife, Melania, said, what happened? I said, those jobs have left Ohio. They're all coming back. They're all coming back. Coming back. Don't move. Don't sell your house. Don't sell your house.
They're all coming back. Don't move. Don't sell your house. In the years after that promise, the Mahoning Valley had fewer manufacturing jobs than when Trump took office. Manufacturing employment increased slightly, but then GM closed its Lordstown plant. And of course, the COVID pandemic certainly played a role. But all those jobs certainly did not come back, certainly not to the 1970s level. But even though the Valley's employment and manufacturing in the Valley remained stagnant at best, Trump's margins of victory in Ashtabula, Trumbull, and Mahoning counties increased by an average of 4 points. How do you explain that, Jim?
Which all makes perfect sense to me. It has to do a lot with status. So in September of 2015, I attended, when I was with my second think tank, I attended a workforce development meeting in Columbiana County, which is part of that valley you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And the third witness in said in the questions and answer portion, she said very casually, you know, we need to bring back the good old days when you didn't even need a high school education to make enough money to afford a house, a car, a boat, and a camper. And the crowd went wild. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, well, they've obviously never read Richard Florida's Rise of the Creative Class, which he wrote with 30 miles away in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, about how the college educated are now going to be driving the modern economy.
Yeah.
Well, then another witness brought up and, you know, and the same question as answer, she went also, we need to bring back the days when you didn't need a high school diploma in order to make enough money to afford a house, a car, a boat, and a camper, always in that order. Finally, the last witness was pounding the table in fury that we could not get back to the good old days where you didn't need a high school diploma in order to afford a house, a car, a boat, and a camper. It's about the loss of status and no longer being able to consider themselves the middle class. And I will tell you, now you're going to get into one of my personal biases here, is that the reason that we have failed this whole population, it has to do with our partisan spring primaries, where candidates are not incentivized to talk about the real issues and instead talk about superficial issues or get into politics or personal destruction.
Yeah, it's easier to be against somebody than to offer a solution that might require your opponent to participate.
Exactly. And when 8% of the people choose 83% of the legislators due to a combination of spring primaries, you know, things of that nature, and this also helps to explain why when I talk to my Trumpian neighbors and relatives, they also say, well, we thought term limits was supposed to fix everything. Well, what term limits was trying to fix the spring primaries make worse because those politicians, what you call the snollygosters, tend to be able to understand how to only appeal to that narrow basis in those spring primaries and move on. If you look, for example, at Trump in his 2016 run for president, he captured 35% of the vote pretty consistently in many states, but in most states it was a winner take all primary, and if you have 15 people running against him in the primary, they're all going to split the non-Trump vote, and he ended up taking it.
Yeah,
and so that's what you end up with now.
And you add in gerrymandering, where you don't have to worry about trying to appeal to folks in the general election because your district, state legislative district or congressional district is carved so you don't. It's very one-sided. It makes the problem even worse. Let's talk about – so this population is out there, and for a lot of years – the divide, the Democrats were the party of the working person. They were the party of the disenfranchised. They were fighting against the elites, the rich. What happened? When did Democrats lose that edge with those folks?
So I'm a great believer in the Manichaean heresy, so I'll divide even the Democrats up into the Sherrod Brown Democrats and the Hillary Clinton Democrats. Sherrod Brown still speaks to those types of issues. That's why he's consistently been very worrisome for me, for us, for we Republicans to be. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, and there's a great letter written by David Betras, who was the Mahoning County Democrat chair. He wrote to the Hillary campaign, and I'll sum it up for you without all the obscenities, which was, will you shut up about retraining these workers into becoming nurses' assistants? These are manly men who want to do manly things. They want to sling concrete block. They want to move dirt with bulldozers. They want to dig trenches with backhoes. And this goes to the issue of status. You know, when you're doing that type of real, and I, by the way, your viewers may not know this, I am actually a fairly decent backhoe operator.
Yes, you are. Okay. So I've heard.
Yeah, and that this job gives them status, prestige. They're able to do something and see something concrete as a result of it. Staring at a computer screen all day inside is simply not their idea of what they want to do in their lives. And so Hillary Clinton totally missed the boat. Sharon still speaks about the dignity of work. Mm-hmm. That's why he's going to be very difficult for us to beat. And that's why you've always heard me say on your show, Dolan would have had a better chance against Sharon because it's more of a natural matchup, I think.
And Matt Dolan, the state senator who finished second in last week's
primary. Who finished second in all this. And I'm just being honest here, yeah. And I know that some Republicans, my colleagues and friends, are going to go, oh, my God, you should always be backing. And I'm going, look, the main purpose of what you do, Mike, is you're asking us to part the curtain so that Bobby and Betty Buckeye, the general public, has an idea of how things really work. By the way, one more thing about my party. You can't be both the populist party and the party of business at the same time. The two are simply incompatible, and those internal tensions will end up riveting the party apart.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, Gene, because there are a lot of sort of, for lack of a better term, we said we weren't going to get into the name calling, but let's call them country club Republicans, corporate Republicans, who back Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell being one. Mike DeWine said he'll support the Republican nominee for president because Donald Trump also believes, and along with the other things, that he wants lower taxes and less government. He's showing that you can be kind of both. That's how he won in 2016.
But you can't do so in the legislature.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to talk about. Yes, I'm going to be a populist, you know, Main Street Republican. And in reality, that's very difficult to pull off. There was about a year ago, there was House Bill 205. That came through the General Assembly. The topic's not important. It had to do with retraining labor workers in very dangerous refinery situations. But all this big six business interests came in and testified against it. And the Ohio Chamber of Commerce went so far as to say, if you vote for this, this will count double negative against you in our scoring. Mm-hmm. To which the Republicans in that committee all voted for it to send it on out. And it voted off the floor with majority of Republican support. Only, I think, 24 Republicans voted no on it. Wow. So, you know, and some folks will say, well, that was due to the vast amounts of money that was sloshing around from certain labor unions. And to which I go, well, answer me this, which came first, the populism or the money? Yeah. And when you ask that question, they get very quiet and then they quietly accede. Well, yeah, it was the populism came first and the money flowed from that. So,
you know, Gene, if you look at the other states,
we have to work this out.
Yeah. If you look at other states around us, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, fairly similar to Ohio. Now, Pennsylvania has Philadelphia on the East Coast, makes it a little different, perhaps. But there, the polls are much closer. Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania went for Biden in 2020. Ohio is firmly still in the grip of Trump. Why does Trump have a firmer grip on Ohio than he has on those other states?
So I don't like casting shade on my opposition, the Ohio Democratic Party has been consistently underperforming due to some internal power structures, which is simply not being reported by the media. For one thing, you've got to get people sitting down in a, you know, and getting them to talk to you for a really long time period, or with, and you know, prying out the stuff out of them. Mm-hmm. But they'll eventually come out. There's some real internal struggles going on in the ODP that really crippled the candidacy of Nan Whaley, I thought she would have made a much closer race of it than what she did, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. But about in August, suddenly became I was starting to sense of something's not right. She's just not getting the support from some of the local Democrat leaders that she should be getting. And it was just very interesting to me. Now, keep in mind, I'm the Republican stepping back and looking at the ODP, and I'm able to cast stones at it.
How about national Democrats? How about national Democrats, Gene? You know, they did not really help Tim Ryan as much as he would have liked in his race against J.D. Vance for Senate 2 years ago. You know, Biden is basically in 2020 wrote off Ohio. You'd think he could take that clip that we played of Donald Trump saying all these jobs are coming back, put it in an ad and saying, where are the jobs, Donald Trump? And he would peel off some votes up there. But have the Democrats just prematurely given up on Ohio?
I wouldn't know if they've given up prematurely on Ohio. I enjoy, though, like it says in the book of Proverbs, iron sharpens iron. And I think that we Republicans are better when we have a coherent, strong Democrat opposition. And the thing that I've noticed in the Ohio State House is how, in my opinion, their opposition muscles have atrophied, that they've not been given enough challenges. I go back to in 93 and 94, under the leadership of then Speaker Joanne Davidson, we were challenging the Democrats almost every day on the floor.
Yeah, now you don't have to.
Of the House. No. And they don't now.
Because there's
worse over in the state Senate.
Yeah. And then, so nationally, yeah. Joe Biden, it stems from the lack of organization, lack of clout that the local Democratic Party has here. And then the operation, the infrastructure is just not here to run a competitive presidential campaign here for our electoral votes.
Look, once again, I'm the Republican casting shade on the D's, and I gotta be careful here. But just what I've noticed is that I'm of the opinion that that they've not done a good enough job. This state is by nature actually a plus 2 to 3 Republican state. It's not a plus 8 Republican state. Mm-hmm. The Democrats simply have not figured out and have not done enough get out the vote stuff. You know, they've been able to do so in urban counties. If you talk, you know, for example, down in Hamilton County, Hamilton County Republican, which is, you know, AKA Cincinnati, has become a very rare thing because they get the vote out early. They have slate cars. They have a very aggressive movement. In my home county of Preble County, there's just not that same aggressiveness. If you go back to the campaign in 2006 of Ted Strickland,
against
2006, it was against Ken Blackwell.
That's right. Ken Blackwell. And Sherrod Brown was against Mike DeWine.
For governor. And he got the vote out for Democrats in small rural counties all across Ohio, which led to both his success, but then also led to the point got so that we actually lost the Ohio House there under Ted Strickland because he understood that methodology. By the way, everybody should also keep in mind John Kasich only beat Ted Strickland by about 80,000 votes, and that was because there were 200,000 votes short up in Cuyahoga County that cycle due to the scandals going on up there.
Yeah, I also
thought.
I asked Ted Strickland about that too. And also, I think the factor up there. Yeah. We're getting deep in the weeds here, but Stephanie Tubbs Jones had died, and I asked him after that election. I said, "How much did that hurt you?" And he said, "You know, it probably did. She didn't. Her voters didn't come out as much as they had because she was a strong supporter of Ted Strickland." But Gene, we got to leave it there. I hope we have sort of peeled back the curtain a bit to what the thinking is of Trump supporters in Ohio. They're not boogeymen and boogeywomen.
They're really good, honest citizens who feel left behind. Yeah, and we need to address that.
Yeah, there are some folks who cross the line, but most folks are just frustrated, and the system is, for whatever reason, has left them behind. And we'll see where it all turns out. Gene Krebs, former state legislature, thanks for joining us on Snollygoster.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We'll be right back.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. And this week, we give it to the Republican National Committee. You know, it's really busy staffing up for the election campaign. It's interviewing candidates for the many open positions it has around the country. The Washington Post reports prospective employees are being asked if they believe the 2020 election was stolen. A spokeswoman for the RNC did not deny the report, saying they want, quote, experienced staff with meaningful views on how elections are won and lost and real experience-based opinions about what happens in the trenches, unquote. A former RNC employee told the Post the question was open-ended, but doubted that anyone who answered that the election was not stolen would get hired. 2020 election affirmers need not apply. From a messaging and human resources standard, the move makes sense. Why hire anyone who disagrees with the Republican nominee's primary stance? Very, very shrewd. And for that, we give the Republican National Committee our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We are part of the NPR network. As always, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And just tell your friends and family about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.